Welcome to the Daily News Podcast with host Daniel Beard.
Hello and welcome to the Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Beard, and the editor of Share Moving Media's Daily News. Today, we are joined by Scott Adams, the publisher of Repertoire Magazine, and by John Pritchard, the publisher of the Journal of Healthcare Contracting. Guys, how you doing?
Doing good, Daniel. This is Scott. I obviously publish a bigger magazine than John's.
Daniel, I'm doing
that's
great.
That's why we put you first there, Scott.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on today. I've been excited to come on your podcast. It's really gained a lot of momentum. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yes. We are happy to have our two publishers on today and looking forward to talking to you guys about your audiences and getting some updates on that, especially since we're all still hunkered down here in our homes. First and foremost, I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about our home state of Georgia, since our governor, Governor Brian Kemp, has basically reopened the state in stages beginning last Friday and has gotten a little bit of kickback and criticism on a national level from that. But I wanted to know if you guys had hit up any tattoo parlors or bowling alleys yet.
I'll let John take that. He's the big tat guy.
Yeah, so it's a great question. You know, I haven't. My hair's long. I don't have any new ink. Haven't gone and gotten a massage, but they're definitely starting to open. We've been, what's been of more interest to me is the restaurant business. You know, it's such a staple of everybody's community and part of our daily lives. And the regulation they have out is one person per 500 square feet. So like you think of a typical Waffle House can probably only have six or seven people being served in it at a time. And this is great disruption to a really big part of our economy. You know, and just yesterday I got my oil changed in my truck, and you know, the waiting room's probably 10 feet by 40 feet and could probably only accommodate six or seven people. And I sat down in there for a couple minutes and was absolutely disgusted and went and sat outside. So just the purview on how we interact with local community businesses is just drastically different. It's more than disrupted. It's shifted. It's changed. And so you think of all the building and architecture that's been built for decades to accommodate pre-social distancing to today. And so all of us in our industry start to connect the dots. What does that mean to the care site, to the waiting room, to picking up prescriptions, and all the different things that used to be normal in healthcare that we have yet to see?
Yeah, I'd like to just chime in on that. I like John. I don't have any new ink yet, but very much
yet. Yes.
Stuck at home for 5 weeks. I've been thinking about it hard. I've really zeroed in on what I want to get. But I did get my toes and fingernails done this weekend, which was a plus. But on a serious note, I closed on a house, actually, if you can imagine that, during this crazy time. Yesterday, and I went to go get the money wired, and I bank with a real small local bank here in Georgia, and it was so interesting when I got there, kind of to John's point of how different things are. I walk up to the door, they see me, kind of put their hand up to stop, like I can't come in. They come out and they say, we're gonna have to make you wear a mask, and we have to ask you a series of questions before we can allow you into the bank. And so she locked the door, went back in, got me a mask, came out. She told me, she goes, put this on however you want. You just have to wear it. I put the mask on and she went through a whole series of questions. Have you had COVID? Have you been tested for it? Have you been quarantined in any period of time? You know, and I'm like, no. And she's like, okay, you can come in. They take me in. I'm the only person allowed in the bank. Do my wire transfer, and then I leave, and the next person outside is going through the same series of questions, and then they bring that person in. So I'm with John. I think it's such the new norm is just not going to be normal for us for a while. I am excited to have this conversation with you, Daniel, because I've been talking with a bunch of distribution reps out there and kind of just getting a feel, you know, around the country of what's going on, because so many practices have been kind of closed for the last 3 to 4 weeks.
Right.
I'm anxious to kind of have some of that conversation today.
Right, right. And, you know, Scott, we spoke a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, and you spoke about the manufacturer and distributor sales reps and just, you know, about the basic challenges of how their jobs have changed under this nationwide social distancing and what we're going through. So what are you hearing from the supplier community in the last week, and what's the follow-up to that?
Yeah. So I've talked to a bunch of them. And I always put the caveat in when we do one of these podcasts, I always tell them I won't name anybody by name or company or anything like that. So I try not to do that when I'm talking. So just for the audience listening, just know this is from a broad mix of the national distributors and even some of the smaller regional players that I've been talking to. And overwhelmingly, what I'm hearing is as things start opening up, you know, practices are going to start opening back up in the next week or so. I know specifically for Georgia, it's a very high percentage of the practices out there that have been closed for the last 3 to 4 weeks are absolutely opening back up next week. Some of the comments a little different than when we talked a few weeks ago after I did that survey with the reps is I'm getting more people on the phone now than I've ever been able to get on the phone. And I'm talking from a mm-hmm. rep standpoint, not me personally. They're able to get mm-hmm. more folks at the practice on the phone and have real conversations and business conversations with them more so than they ever have or have in the last several years. Almost to the point that I ask them all, hey, do you miss calling on accounts? And they all do. They all miss seeing their friends and the people they've called on for years. But they're like, I'm getting so much done with accounts via the phone and via, you know, email now. And some of that's because they're closed down and everybody has time, you know. And then the other thing that I would throw out is without fail, they almost are all like, I'm reading more and learning more. And, you know, I said this last time we were on too, you know, Repertoire's website's up 80% versus the same mm-hmm. time last year. So, I mean, people are just starving for information around this.
Mm-hmm. All right. And John, as a follow-up to that, can you speak to your audience and just give us a sense what you've been hearing and how they've handled their job during this time of social distancing?
Yeah, I'll do my best. You know, as of today, while we're recording it, there is a renewing sense of optimism that we are over the worst, have identified what the problems are for the future. But we're still in a time of great flux from between now and actually getting to, you know, what is next. Right now on top of everybody's mind is how are we going to handle electives or scheduled surgeries and procedures and delayed cancer treatment screenings and all of that good stuff. And what will that mean? And how much pent up demand is there? There's so many things at work there. You know, we've got 30 million unemployed now that probably are worried about their health care and may not prioritize their health like they would have 6 weeks ago. Are they going to come in and have their procedures done? Are they going to be able to pay for it? Are they insured? All of that good stuff. But just the mechanics of setting up for it, whether it's a surgery center or you know, a hospital. And, you know, there's just such great variety in what's going on. I saw today Pennsylvania's opening up for elective surgeries.
That's right.
Yeah, they've certainly been a hot spot on kind of either end of the state. And it's just touch and go for now. There's different guidance coming out. There's still such great political divide and confidence and or lack of confidence in whether or not they should be opening up and what speed. So I think the general feeling is we've now got a North Star on how to navigate out of this, but there's still great uncertainty in the timing of it. And if I could switch that 180 degrees to the purview of the great suppliers of our community, those selling to hospitals and health systems and through distribution and on GPO contract, it's very similar. They're really struggling on how to forecast for the rest of 2020. You know, a month ago, I would talk to folks and they're like, oh, our forecast is an absolute V. We're going to go straight down and straight up. Well, now they've kind of turned that into a U, if you will. And a lot of them are running three forecasts. And they've already kind of thrown that V forecast out and working on the the V, or I'm sorry, on the U-shaped return of flow to more of a hockey stick, but at what ascension rate? So there's a lot of uncertainty out there around the timing, but the great news is I think we've sort of maybe gotten over the hump that the triage is ending, coming to an end. And maybe isn't our worst fear being realized. So I think that's sort of good news.
Hey, I'd like to just chime in to John's point there on kind of the U-shape, you know, or the V-shape or the hockey stick. In the handful of reps that I've talked with in the last week or so out there, they're like, yeah, April was a really tough month for us from a distribution standpoint. Sales have been really low. But in the last week, they've almost completely rebounded and sales are going, you know, products flowing back out as practices start to gear up to get ready to start seeing patients again.
Mm-hmm. And so as we come out of the U-shape, and what changes do you see happening when we get back to business? And how long do you think we're going to be at the bottom of that U-shape? Are we coming out of it right now?
I'll let John go first on this one.
Geez, thanks, Scott. That's great. You know, I got to tell you, my freaking crystal ball is not very clear right now. But I'll give you a couple of themes that we constantly hear. You know, one is we've got to secure sourcing in the same hemisphere to some level, if nothing else, to what surge demand we've seen. You know, I for one have grave concern that our providers are going to have a short memory and forget what a tenuous situation we're in particular with PPE. But, you know, will there be guidance out of how much that needs to be, you know, more in this hemisphere or closer? I'm not going to say just American made because I'd be surprised if we do that in any kind of considerable way. But we've got to come up with an action plan where we have enough inventory close by, accessible, and earmarked for an immediate need by a health system. I don't know what that looks like, to be honest with you, whether it's a national stockpile, whether it's a contracted allotment and a rotation of those goods in some consorted effort or not. Last week, I'm losing track of the weeks. It was either last week or the week before, I did a podcast with Dr. Eugene Schneller from Arizona State University. And he's very adamant that, you know, that a stockpile is not the answer, a national storeroom by the federal government. But very much what we need to do is find a way to finance supply chain. And he uses a great parable or analogy of, you know, your local community firehouse. The firehouse is built in case we have a fire, not hoping for a fire by any means, but certainly financed in case we do have a fire and respond to a fire. And somehow we need to do that with the U.S. supply chain. So those are kind of my real basic themes. I think that'll change is we've got to find a way to have inventory closer in reach and a national level find a way to finance it. The other thing I would say is I think the supply chain leader is going to change drastically from somebody who's experienced, that's done this, that knows the ins and outs, to a much more data-driven leader where we know best practices, understand surge requirements and demand and secondary and third tier supply, so that the vulnerability of what they're sourcing is much more transparent. I think those are our directional beacons we know are going to change.
Yeah, I think, you know, to chime in there behind John, if to not have a crystal ball, you pretty much nailed it, I think, JP. So much change is going to come, and I love that you're always dropping names. You did a podcast with Dr. Eugene Schneller. You're hilarious. I had a conversation actually this week on Monday, I think today's Tuesday, on Monday, with the CEO of one of the national distributors. And he's very much of the opinion, real similar to John, in that there's got to be some kind of a change from a stockpile standpoint. And a couple of things that he threw out that I thought were interesting, he's like, I think it needs to not only be done at a national government level, but probably at the local government level. And programs need to be put in place to rotate that inventory. Obviously, you can't have it just sitting there for years and years, but that it can't just be a national issue. It has to be done locally, because as you look at some of these hotspots that we've dealt with, everything is so different depending on where you live in the country and what you need. But some of the things I think from a more of an account standpoint, you know, obviously my audience is a little different than John's with the being the distribution reps out calling. I think there'll be some changes there of how they interact with accounts and some of that. I honestly don't think that they'll stop going to see practices. In fact, this will surprise you, but a handful of the folks that I spoke with are wearing masks and gloves and still going into accounts. You know, their companies let it be their discretion if they wanted to call on accounts or not. It wasn't mandated that they had to stay home. So I think reps are going to be itching to get back out there. I don't know that they'll be handshaking with everyone. I think that one of the things that we'll probably see is and this is kind of a silly marketing thing, but I wonder how much product literature will be actually handed from one person to another. I think you'll see the digital piece pick up for these reps and how they're getting information to their accounts, kind of like they're already doing now from home. So those are a handful of the things that I kind of see coming. And I think it'll be a slow ramp up of people getting back into practices. So I don't think we'll be back to January type sales of MedSurg products in May. But I do think, I hope anyways, by June, July, we are. One of the things that I think is real interesting, and John and I have had this conversation offline, is, you know, the elective surgeries and how that's going to affect these health systems and these surgery centers when that comes back online. You know, at some point, an elective surgery becomes a mandatory surgery, and I think they're going to just be slammed coming out of this without a doubt.
Yeah. That's a little bit looking ahead, guys, as to when we get back to business and how the new normal is going to look. Just kind of speaking in the present here, our industry has really been put on the national stage, really the worldwide stage, since coronavirus and this COVID-19 crisis. How do you think our industry has handled the situation to date?
Oh, Daniel, what a question, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's rightly so reprioritized who's important and the thoughtfulness and care we have to give to clinicians and frontline workers. And the travesty of which we've seen play out, where we didn't have something as simple as PPE and had enough of it. And I would say there's probably not a supply chain leader in the nation that doesn't wish they had done things a little bit different. And I don't know what that means, to be honest with you. I don't think there's a CEO of a hospital or health system, you know, that didn't heed warning when Hurricane Maria came through and created shortages a couple years ago in Puerto Rico and said to themselves, how fragile is our most basic products in the supply chain? So I would say the human element of how we've reacted as Americans has been awesome. The reaction has been awesome. But the scary eye-opening of identifying the vulnerabilities, will have, you know, seismic implications, I think, for years to come. I think we'll have, I don't think there will ever be another business as usual back to a new normal. I just don't. I think it's going to be a whole new paradigm shift of what's important, what's prioritized, who we listen to. I think there's great concern, in what this means for clinicians coming in to the marketplace. Well, as many people go to medical school and nursing school, you know, one statistic I saw that really, when we were getting to the national epidemic and whether governors were weighing whether or not to close school, was 38% of nurses have a school age child. So their absolute huge concern was, if I close schools, do nurses not report because they got to stay home with child care? That's absolutely frightening. It shows you how interdependent we are, amongst each other. And so I'd say, you know, the human reaction has been wonderful and everything any American should be proud of. But I think it's shed light on a wrongly incentivized way to buy, procure, and supply.
And Scott, do you have a take on that, on how the industry has handled the situation to date, and what are your thoughts on the PPE shortages?
Yeah, I think there's a lot in that question, and I obviously come at it from a little bit different angle than John, because he's thinking more from the end user and the providers and the caregivers, you know, his audience and the supply chain folks on his side. Where I look at it from the supplier side and the distributor side, and I'm always the optimist, and I always sing the praises of distribution. So I know this is probably going to maybe not come off as much as I mean it to. I think that distribution's done an amazing job to react to what's taken place as best they can, given the fact that the supply of a lot of what was needed is coming across the water from, you know, Southeast Asia. And so they've all worked together. You know, we did that podcast with Jonah Lysak. If you haven't heard it, it went out on Friday around allocation specifically and how the industry's handled it. And just to use her words, she was so impressed with how distribution, and when she's saying distribution, she doesn't mean her company. She's talking about the her competitors with her organization working together to do the air bridge and get product over and get product out to accounts as fast as they possibly could and working around the clock. And to John's point, the human element of it, you know, those warehouse workers that still had to show up, you know, on three shifts to get product picked, packed, and pulled and shipped, they still did it, putting themselves at risk and their family at risk of being, you know, not being able to social distance as best they could, you know, by just staying home because they had to show up for work. From a PPE shortage, you know, I come from the glove business for almost 10 years back in the early 2000s. And we saw shortages then, you know, caused by different things. You know, I'm with John in the sense of, man, I'd love to see some stuff brought back to the States and made here versus depending on overseas. Some of those things, though, you just frankly can't make here. You know, the raw material is grown there and that's how the stuff's made. But I think one of the big issues that's going to have to be addressed when we get on the other side of this is just-in-time inventory really realistic going forward? We've kind of put ourselves in this position as an industry as a whole by trying to take so much cost out of the system and doing it on the backbones of the suppliers and distributors across the industry to a point of, you know, they were having to flip inventory so rapidly just to be able to stay in business, much less make any money. And so I think that's got to be looked at, you know, inside and out, that, man, just-in-time inventory, when you run into an epidemic like this, is just not feasible. You know, we're going to have to really take a hard look at what the position that as a whole, now I'm not blaming any one person, we've gotten ourselves into, and how do we get out of that and make sure that we don't face this again going forward, especially for products that take 60 to 90 days to get across the water, to get made, get across the water, get on the rail and get to accounts.
Yeah. Hey,
Scott, and, if I could comment on distribution just for a second too. Sure. You know, it, from the purview of a supply chain leader, I think the last 10, 12, 15 years, they really believe that they could do without the distributor, or at least the distribution services of the big distributors. And in some weird way, I probably promoted that too much in the past, or just maybe was slightly dismissive of the importance of distribution. But if the supply chain leader of today doesn't very squarely see the value of these national distributors, that they have a blind spot that could be really damaging to their organization. When President Trump invited leaders of our industry, you know, he didn't bring health system leaders up. He didn't bring GPO leaders up to the Rose Garden. He brought Brian Tyler from McKesson and Brad Kinnett from Shine up and put them in front of our nation and said, these are imperative links in our U.S. healthcare supply chain. And I will never forget that message again. And it's not just the value of bringing product and mixing lots and adding assortment, having one common payable, the value of these distributors. It's absolutely the convener of a community. They have product flowing through there and can balance it for the best of the community, meaning our nation and even the world at times, that should never again, be undervalued. So any supply chain leader that's worried about what they're paying a distributor for, I think the distributor should absolutely add another line item for being a spoke in the community of information and flow and knowledge of connecting the dots in the industry. And I certainly, for one, will never dismiss or discount that again.
Yeah, John, to say that another way, I'm so glad you brought that up. One of the reps I was talking to this week, she made the comment, she goes, because we were talking about allocation specifically, and she's like, just how hard the conversations are with accounts. She's like, but I was able to take product that I knew practices were closed down, and because of my one relationship, but also because of 20 years of calling on those accounts, I knew they were shut down. I knew what their volumes were, and I was able to move those to accounts, maybe not even in Georgia, maybe to another state or New York where they needed it. And I think to your point, man, the value of a national and even regional distribution partners for these supply chain executives and for these health systems and the local physician offices, if to your point, man, if they don't see that value going forward of how great it is, they have an absolute blind spot, because distribution totally stepped up to the plate here as rapidly as they could and moved inventory around this country to the hot spots that needed it. And if we didn't have them, New York would have been in a world of hurt. You know, California, Seattle would have all been a world of hurt if they were all doing it individually on their own.
I just want to thank you guys for taking the time to join us here today on the Daily News Podcast. This has been an excellent podcast, speaking to our listeners and our readers, and talking about the suppliers and distribution and end users. We're continue to be in an unprecedented time in American history and world history, and getting each and every side, an angle of our industry covered like we did today in the podcast, which was just great. So thank you, Scott, and thank you, John, so much for joining us today.
Absolutely, Daniel. Thank you.
Daniel, thanks for having me, and keep up the great work with this podcast. I've loved every episode.
Yeah, it's been great,
thanks,
man.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. Thanks so much. Listeners, you can find our continuing COVID-19 coverage at repertoiremag.com and at jhconline.com. And you can find the Daily News in your email inbox each and every day. Thanks, guys.